Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How are you today? Happy Sunday. I'm recording this on Sunday, even though the podcast doesn't come out till Wednesday, because I'm back at home for a couple of days between two legs of a camping trip, which is a little weird, but it's something we had to do. We were up at Elk Falls Provincial Park in British Columbia on Vancouver Island for four lovely days, and then had to come back for a doctor's appointment for Cindy to check out her broken finger, which is healing up fine. And then we're going to do some laundry and cook some more food and get some groceries and stuff, repack, and head out tomorrow morning and head up pretty much in the same direction, only about 40 kilometers away from our first campsite, to a lovely little spot called Loveland Bay. We'll see if this little rental car we have makes it up the logging road or not, but I think we're going to make it. It's going to be fun. It'll be just fine. But I'm out of cell coverage when I'm up there, so I'm putting this together now to share with you so that you don't miss a beat. Today on the show, I'm talking with Brooke Haynes, and Brooke is from Pennsylvania, and she has a lovely little bakery called Wild Rose, and yeah, is making the good stuff and is doing it all by herself, you know, baking a couple days a week, sharing it with folks in her town, and then recovering and doing it all again. We had a really fun talk. She's an interesting person. She's done a bunch of neat things and traveled around a bunch before settling back in her native Pennsylvania. So we talk about all of that. Before then, just want to share one quick story for you, because we had a bit of fun on this camp trip, and just want to share one story. So one of the reasons that I love Vancouver Island so much is the wildlife out here and the natural beauty of the thing. Because, you know, I live in a city and I live right downtown in the middle of the city, but you don't have to get very far before you are out in the mountains and lakes and rivers and trees and ocean and all of that. It's pretty wild, to be honest with you. And where we were camping, it's about a 3-hour drive from where we live, but you go through a bunch of good stuff just to get there. But we hit the jackpot. I think we filled out the bingo card for wildlife on this trip, you know, from little squirrels running around the campsite to deer walking along the road when we were driving, but wading through the river that ran right past our campsite, which was way cool, to a whole bunch of bald eagles. One was just perched on a branch right by our campsite for forever, just kind of staring down, looking for fish, and then would fly away and come back the next day. And then even, you know, driving around on little day trips and stuff, just a ton of eagles, which was amazing. And we even saw two whales on the trip too, because one at the end of a hike, we hiked up to this headlands alongside the channel that runs between Vancouver Island and some of the Gulf Islands, you know, in the straits in between, and saw a humpback whale playing or feeding or something. So he was hanging out for about half an hour and banging his tail and coming up for air and that kind of thing. So that was pretty cool. And then on one day of the trip, we drove to the other side of Vancouver Island to a little village called Gold River and hopped on a cargo boat to go out to some of the settlements and stuff that's out in Nootka Sound that you can only reach by water or by like float plane. And they do these tours. So you can buy a ticket to go on this boat and you make these stops, and then they, you know, unload the boat with, you know, groceries and supplies and that kind of stuff. And then haul back garbage. And then we go on to the next place, and saw another whale on that trip, which was cool. But we also saw the coolest thing. I didn't even know it was possible. It was called a wet kayak pickup. And so there was a family of like five people that were out sea kayaking and camping. You know, they would kayak during the day and then go up on shore and camp and then continue on, that kind of thing. And you can order, like you can reserve the boat to come pick you up and then take you back to Gold River. And so, yeah, we met these five kayaks, in the ocean, somewhat near shore, in a calmer spot. And they would lower down, the guys on the boat lowered down like a big wooden pallet on hooks down over the side of the boat. And then a kayak would swim on top of the pallet, and then they would lift you up and into the boat. And they did this, five times, and right in the water. And so we all got to watch that, and that was fun. And then because these folks had been camping for like 4 or 5 days out on the kayaks and just eating whatever food they had and that kind of thing, they immediately went down to the canteen part on the main deck of the boat, which is this little enclosed space in the middle of the boat and holds maybe like 30 people, and ordered sandwiches and stuff. And as they opened up this container that must have had their money or something, they accidentally set off a can of bear spray inside this enclosed cabin and scattered everyone. Everyone got out of there really quick until they could air it out. And so, so we had our first, we were outside. We were just watching all these people running by and coughing, but we had our first experience with bear spray on the boat in the middle of Nootka Sound. So if you're going to experience bear spray, I think that's the way to do it. Because it didn't seem very pleasant for a lot of the folks. So it was a fun day all around, seeing wildlife, checking out these fly-in fishing resorts that we were dropping off groceries to, seeing beautiful scenery, and then watching the kayaks getting picked up and then bear spraying people. So it was a good time. And so that's our fun. This next trip, we're camping right beside a lake. And it's sort of one way in on the logging road, and then we head back out in 4 days' time. So I'm taking a bunch of books, and I'm taking my paint set, and I'm going to, do some painting and do some writing and do some reading. And when it gets too hot, I'm going to swim in the lake. And Cindy's trying to figure out how to get a couple of kayaks on top of our little Chevy Spark rental car. And who knows, maybe we'll pull that off too. But if not, I'm just going to be wading in the lake, which is okay. All right, let's talk about baking. Today on the show, like I said, we talked to Brooke Haynes. Brooke's a lot of fun. The story about Brooke, or how I got to know Brooke, was through Instagram. And one post in particular, it popped up on my feed, and it was a picture of Brooke at the end of a long bake shift. And I think it was like at Christmas time, because I've been wanting to talk to her for a while. And someone took a picture of her just absolutely exhausted, sort of sitting down in front of the oven after, the last of the baking had come out. And, you could tell she'd been working, for probably round the clock to get all this baking done. And she had this look of exhaustion, but also of triumph, I think. It was sort of like, yeah, I did this. You bet I did. And you folks are going to love all this baking. And the picture stuck with me, so I reached out and said, hey, come on, let's talk. And she agreed. And so we had a really good chat. Of course, in the middle of, her prep day to get ready for baking. So we didn't have a lot of time, but, we had enough time for sure. And we had a really good talk, and I'm excited to share it with you now. So here we are with Brooke Haynes from Wild Rose Baking Company in Pennsylvania. Let's go. Hello, Brooke.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
What's Thursday like for you?
I am prepping for tomorrow. So okay. It's my prep day for baking tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right on. Right
on. Kind of ran away from the bakery a little bit. I have horrible service down there, so I came up to
it. Okay. And so did you live nearby the bakery?
I do, yes. Yeah. It's very, very close. I'm only about 2 minutes away. So.
Oh, how great. Yeah. That is such a joy when that happens,
Yes.
Yeah.
It's almost a must for me. Just I'm the only one. So it's like, I have to be close. Yeah.
So you're like totally on your own solo.
Yes.
Hey? Wow.
Yeah.
I think the reason I reached out to you was because I saw a picture on your Instagram around a holiday, might have been like last Christmas or whatever. And there is this picture of you. It's sort of the end of the shift and you're spent, like, like it's over. Right. And it's like, oh, I feel that in my soul here. I know that feeling. and I thought, oh, you're so brave to get the picture and post the picture up that I said, I got to meet you. So,
Well, I appreciate it. This is so cool.
Awesome. So you're in Pennsylvania?
I am. I'm in Brookville, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what it's so what kind of a town is Brookville?
It's a small little historic town of about 3,500 people.
That's okay.
It.
Yeah.
We're north of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Right. And so
I looked it up on the map actually, because I've it's Pennsylvania is one of those weird geographies. That, you know, I think of Philadelphia being almost like coastal,
right?
And then realize, okay, you're the other end of the state. You're closer to my buddy Vince in Akron, Ohio, actually. So I've been out to Akron. So I kind of know a little bit of the countryside, I guess. It's not that far away, but
yeah.
It's probably so fighting words to say you're just like Ohio. So sorry, but
that's okay.
I get it.
Yeah, that's okay. We have I think from that area, we're hilly. You know, we've got more hills and mountains.
Gotcha.
Than Ohio does.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I didn't live here my whole life, so I'm still considered a newbie.
Okay. Where are you from?
Born in Pittsburgh, actually, but then I moved to South Alabama. So I was
in
Alabama most of my life. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So like parents went for work or something, or how did that?
Pretty much. Yeah. My family was involved in a big move. So we
Kind of
went down there.
Yeah.
I was very little. I was two. I didn't have.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And so then, and what brought you back to Pennsylvania?
I actually was from that point. I was in Columbia, South America. And, yeah. And then my children and I came back to Pennsylvania and lived with my mom.
Okay.
And so, then I didn't even know where Brookville was. So I got remarried and he was from here. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So, and what was the deal in Columbia? What were you doing?
We worked with, a church there.
Yeah.
And we did a lot of, just humanitarian aid and things like that. Yeah.
It's supposed to be beautiful when the political climate is more stable. It's supposed to be a very beautiful place.
It is. Yeah. It's amazing. I mean, the different ecosystems that are there are incredible. Yeah.
I have a buddy that he's Canadian now, but he's originally from Bogota or Medellin, actually, maybe. And he's an artist, and when I met him, he had just, you know, emigrated to Canada, and then, but he kept going back because his mom and family were there. Right. And so he would come back with these amazing photos of, you know, both the city and the crazy city life, and then the countryside. And, you know, he was building an extra floor on top of his mom's house. Yeah. Right. Like they could just, we just went up another story, and it's like,
just go up. Exactly. You can't go out, but they go up. Yeah.
You know, and meanwhile, you know, I'm thinking about city zoning and stuff for my for our bakery. And he says, no, you just build it. It's like, oh, okay.
Right.
So cool.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
So what got you into baking and all of that?
Really, it kind of sounds funny, but about, I'd say 3 or 4 years ago, I've always been a cook. I mean, for my family, and really enjoyed that. But, the show Chef's Table. Have you seen that? Okay.
Yeah.
So the one with Nancy Silverton just kind of literally changed my life. Yeah. Like, I just started questioning everything about food. And so.
Yeah. Was that the show?
Yeah.
Was that the episode when she went to like the village in Italy? Yeah. And like, cause she's got the little.
Yeah. It kind of covers her life there and in California. So.
Yeah. And
and the competition between the two cafes across the street in the village. I remember that really. Yeah, well, I watched that one too. I don't watch all the Chef's Tables, but anything. Every once in a while, there's either a person or it's a baking thing or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, got to check it out.
Yeah,
it's really, amazing stuff. Yeah, and so she was sort of your inspiration.
Yeah, and just the want to know kind of more about where, you know, my food comes from, and obviously, I think I could start with bread.
Yeah.
So that was my kind of inspiration, and I had a failed attempt and then kind of quit for about a year, and then got a really good active starter going, and I got to the point where I didn't have enough people to give away bread to. Like, there just wasn't, I kept just like, please have a loaf here, have a loaf, you know?
Yeah.
And then finally the opportunity opened up, a really tiny little shop in town.
Yeah.
Like 100 square feet tiny. Whoa. And I just, and so I just jumped in with 2 feet. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So that's how I started. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And when was that?
2 years ago.
Almost 2 years ago. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and so within the first year I moved out of that.
Yeah. I saw that video on your Facebook page where you were telling your customers, it's like, okay, like sort of like last summer. It's like, it was so funny because I'm watching it and you're like, okay, like I'm not going to be bred for a couple of weeks here because we're moving, you know, but it's like, but we're moving, you know? Yeah.
Yes.
So what's your new space like?
It's great. It has a retail space out front.
Uh-huh.
In the center is kind of a big kitchen. And then in the back is just a storage space. So it compared to what I was in, it's huge, but
sure.
Yeah. And sure. I think I could do really so much more with it. But again, it is just me at the time.
On its early days, right?
Yeah.
Like that's the, it's so fascinating to me, folks, that, you know, kind of how do you get your start? And then when you're doing everything, how do you grow and do more? Right. Right? And it's so,
it cool is that, all that consuming.
You, yeah. And so how are you operating if you're doing it all by yourself? Like how many days are you baking or that kind of a thing?
Very limited, actually.
Yeah.
So I baked since 2 years ago, 2 days a week, which really, it puts me in the bakery every day. I'm there every day, but I'm actually only open 2 days a week. And then I went up to 3 for a little bit. And then I realized that I had zero time. I still have 2 kids in high school. So I was like, okay, I'm jumping back to 2 days.
Yeah.
And, all through COVID, I mean, we're not, you know, I can't say it's over, but we, thankfully our area is, we're such a small town that it hasn't been like big cities at all.
I gotcha. Yeah.
So we were I was very busy all through 2020 and it seems now that people are out and about, those weekday bakes aren't as desired as like Fridays are so busy. So I've just like slam packed everything possible into one day.
Yeah.
And so, I do some of my wholesale orders during the week and then prep everything for a Friday bake.
Wow. So, oh man, you're doing wholesale too and stuff. Well, that's wild. Good for you. Yeah.
Not, you know, not a ton, but enough.
Well, and so, I'm curious, like what kind of oven are you using and that kind of thing?
I have, 2 Rothkos. So Rothko B40. Yeah. I started out with 1 and then, I waited almost 7 or 8 months for the second one.
Yeah.
To come in. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I was talking to a fella yesterday from the other side of your state, actually. He's just outside Philadelphia. And he's in line for a Rothko now. And with COVID just upping the demand like crazy, he's waiting 6 months. It's a, like he got the letter next January is what they're promising now. Right. And so he's sort of, okay, you know, what can you do? But those are, you know, I've never used one. I've seen some, but until like 3 years ago, I'd never even heard of these little guys. It was always like, nah, you're at least getting a, you know, a 2-deck massive oven, you know, is sort of how you start. And it's been, those are kind of remarkable to get folks from the sort of from a home oven, Dutch oven kind of thing to
Dutch ovens, right?
To like next that and sort of next level up, right?
Right. It makes it accessible.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of because paying, you know, whatever it is, $3,900 for something versus $20,000 for a big oven, you know.
My oven oven was $27,000 like in 2015, right? You know,
right.
And I was happy to pay it. I was happy to pay that little. It was like,
It's made it very accessible, I think.
Cool. What's the learning curve on that? Like, how did that go for you?
I mean, I am so thankful. There's a huge community like on Instagram, huge. Honestly, I've learned so much, but there's a bit of a learning curve and you shuffle things around, you shuffle, you know, your loaves around and you turn the temperatures up and down and, you know, but I'm kind of like a, let's see what happens kind of person. Mm-hmm. So, I know I have some friends who are so meticulous and so perfect and they're watching every temperature and they're getting it right. And then I'm like, okay, let's give it a try. And we get, you know, I get good results from it. So
Well, and you can work in small enough quantities that it's like you can stay on top of it too.
Right? Correct.
Like that's
And after 2 years, it's so interesting. Even I can smell the difference. Like before my timer goes off, I'll smell it and I'm like, it's time. And so I go, you know, as soon as I go towards the oven, the timer goes off and I'm like, pretty cool.
That's awesome. You're in tune. Yeah. Oh, fantastic. So with two Rothkos, about how many loaves can you do in a batch?
I do 9 at a time in each oven. So I can 18. Do 18. I think I do my loaves are a little bit bigger, like pre-bake, they're like 850 grams.
Yeah,
I know a lot of people do a little bit smaller than that.
Yeah.
And they can do a little bit more, like 12 at a time, but mine are a little larger. So
Well, when we closed our retail bakery in 2015, like I had already built a brick oven, like a wood-fired one in my backyard, right? Mm-hmm. And so I went back to baking out of that for 3 years. So similar, you know, 2 days a week, like I'd bake Friday, Saturday, and on holidays, I might do a Sunday one or something, you know, and, you know, mixed by hand, but I could do 16 to, if I had to push it, 18 loaves in my brick oven, which is kind of like your two Rothkos, right?
And
it was like, I was like 850 grams if there was something in it, like seeds or whatever.
Right.
And if it was just plain flour, it'd be like 800 grams, right? For like a country sourdough. Because otherwise, for me anyways, they would get kind of balloony. It'd be like, there's that sort of look that you're after. And when they start getting too big, they can get it. For me anyways, they were getting erratic. But but it's a nice number. Like, you know, like it you is. Can, for me, like for one person doing it. And, you know, and if I'm going to do say 5 bakes, times that, it's like, okay, it's a busy day, but it's not killing me. It's like, I can do it again tomorrow, but it's like, that's a non-trivial amount of product that you're making, right? Like that's, you know, cause you're probably like 100 loaves by the end of the day or something. And it's like, it's that's pretty awesome. You know?
And I do a lot of focaccia too. A lot of people, that's become a favorite. So quite a few pans of that as well.
Cool. the oven would be just awesome for that. Like the pans fit pretty solid.
I found some 16 by 16 pans that I use. Nice. So it's just right. Cause the oven's 18 by 18. So it's perfect.
Yeah. I found, because I never designed my oven for sheet pans at all. That's like a full sheet pan, like forget about it. It was like, it was so inefficient, but I could get, when I went down to half pans, I never found square ones. Those would actually be really smart, you know, but the half rectangular ones, I could kind of fit 4 in there if I just held it just right. You know? So cool. So cool.
Yeah, I was using round ones for a while and someone had given them to me and they were great. And I was like, this is not making sense. I'm losing so much space with these round pans. So I finally bit the bullet and bought the square one. So
yeah. Well, then when you, when your oven is the constraint, if it's the limiting factor, right?
Right.
Then you can, you know, you want to use every millimeter.
Every
can,
inch,
right?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Good for you.
Yeah.
Good
yeah.
For you. And so, so it's neat. So are you able to, with having like a retail space and that, are you able to like get your baking done and then serve customers, or do you have someone kind of help? Yeah. You can do the whole
cut. Yeah. Yeah. I don't open till 3 p.m.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of interesting. I've spent a lot of time, not like educating, but just trying to tell people why I do what I do.
Right.
And I know that they're probably like, Brooke, just enough, but like, I just want everyone to understand, you know, the hours are weird and I know I'm not there a lot, but I promise there's a reason for it. But so I bake all day Friday and then open at 3.
Yep.
Usually it's like a mad rush to the front shelves and I just put everything out and then we're good to go. But
yeah, but you're still kind of like able to carry a bit of a conversation and stuff, right? Like
yes. And I love it. I do. I mean, also not being from here, we've been here 6 years, but I didn't, most people know everyone like here. So it's been a great way to be able to meet people and you know, see how they are. And, you know, everyone talk, we get a chance to talk and it's great.
Yeah. No, I totally get that. That was when one of the things that personally I gave up when we opened the retail bakery. And so now you've got like a front crew and I'm working, you know, we're there from 4 p.m. till like noon maybe. And, you know, so you never saw customers in the afternoon. And if you did, it was because somebody was missing a shift. And so you would come in and fill in for them.
And then
you'd hear the, oh, you're finally working, are you? You know, like that kind of thing.
It's
like,
yeah, I'm finally working.
Everybody thinks, you know, I'm like Daddy Warbucks here, just raking in the money.
Right, exactly. All those loaves of bread.
Yeah, exactly. It's like simple arithmetic. I had one guy that with he used to own a garden center. And so, you know, it's like selling bedding plants and stuff. And when you know, when you're selling like $3 bedding plants and you make all your money in one weekend in May, like he's like 10 days, he said, you know, he'd make, you know, $20,000 a month in March and he'd make $20,000 a day in May, you know, like that kind of thing, like, you know, that kind of thing. And so he'd come in and he'd say, well, he'd look at the shelves and you could see him doing the arithmetic and he's going like, are you okay? Like are you, I know what stuff costs, right? He had no illusions because he's like, I just don't see you moving enough product to make
the money
that would make him happy. Right. You know, like like if it was my business, I couldn't see how you'd do this.
It's definitely like I've had people refer to it. They'll be like, well, it's your passion project. I'm like, well, yes, it is. You're right. You're right. But I'm thankful that I, you know, have a husband who has a job that's a good job and that I can do this and it provides enough.
Well, it can. That's a begs the question, I guess. It's sort of like, what are you kind of hoping for? If not like this year, but sort of what's your kind of vision for for the place?
That's a great question. I love being hands-on and doing it all.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's like a control thing or if it's just, I'm being realistic.
Yeah.
Because at this point I'm kind of flushed, you know what I mean? Like I'm good. And I know that bringing on more people just means so much more other than the baking aspect of it. I mean, and I know that you can grow doing that, but also, you know, the second you bring somebody on, you've got so many things that you have to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah. you've got three new job descriptions of like manager and, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
you know, insurance and workman's comp and all the things that you have to have.
Oh, payroll, so,
as far as I can push this out, I would love to do that. I would love to be able to do some more like pop-up things and farmers markets and things like that, and really use my space for, you know, housing the business, but be able to take it out a little bit, because again, we're a small town. I don't know. There's only so much bread you can sell to, to 3,400 people and them like want to have it all the time. I have some great faithful customers who are in the shop every single week. And we also are in an area that's Cook Forest and Allegheny National Forest. So you have to come through town to go there.
Gotcha.
And I've had it's really neat. People just stop in and be like, we've heard about you.
Yeah.
And they're on their way to camp or whatever. So that's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you can be the outpost general store kind of thing in tourist season if you want.
And that's really honestly was my goal in the beginning, to be able to have the shop, the retail space up front, to be able to do that kind of thing. And have right now I keep oils and vinegars and salts and things like that up front, so people can, and as much local as I can get. I do that.
I was talking to a friend of mine in Minnesota that was talking about that for him, it was sort of COVID caused it, because he had to shut down. He had a small seating area in the front, and that wasn't possible anymore.
Right.
But what he did was kind of converted that into sort of like the local food pantry, and started building that into all of his orders. And he said it wasn't a game changer, but it paid for itself. It was a noticeable improvement to the, you know, to sales and bottom line and stuff. And well, you know, I don't know. I've been thinking about that a lot. Cause like when we had our retail space, I always kind of dreamed about like, this can be the, you know, if not the meeting place, maybe the gathering place. I was always thinking, you know, when we're closed at night, if somebody wanted to run a book club out of there, it's like, let's do it. And, you know, what would it cost to hire someone, you know, a high school student to serve coffee and cookies while somebody ran a book club, and it could be like the place where people meet. But you can't do that if you're run off your feet trying to, you know, bake 5 days a week by yourself or something, whatever.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a cool spot that you're in now to say, hey, I got a space. I got the stuff. What can I do with it? What do I want to do with it?
Yeah. And that's what we've thought about that same thing. Obviously COVID didn't let that happen, but now that we're back at it, we had one event. Our town has a Laurel Festival. And so it's a big kind of street festival, and it goes on for a week. And we had a little event at the shop, which was neat. So we had some people there tying flies like for fishing, fly tying, and
I saw that was post neat. And I thought that's really cool.
My husband happens to be like, that's his thing.
He's the fisherman.
He is the fisherman. But I would love to be able to do that. It is a great space. The building that I'm in actually has a good history of that. Before me, there was a nonprofit called Create in there, and they used to do all kind of community outreach, and it was, you know, a group of artists and things like that. So people are used to that in the space that I'm at now. So it would be neat to be able to bring some of that back in there.
Yeah.
And they're still operating too and in town, but it would be neat.
Yeah. Well, and I think I saw another picture of yours. Like, it looks like you're kind of on sort of like a main street, if not the main street of, you know, there's other shops around you and that kind of thing, which is cool. Yeah.
Yeah, we're on Main Street. It's right next to the liquor store. So, you can hop next door and get wine and come over and get bread, and then you're set.
Yeah, you need something to soak it up, right? Yeah.
Exactly. So it honestly is a great location. And our town is such a neat little, there's a lot of small towns in Pennsylvania specifically that have really not fared well.
Yeah.
But Brookville, really, we have some industry here that's been here for a long time, and they're just, it's kind of a thriving little town, and it's neat. Yeah.
Well, and yeah, that's the reality of it. Is my understanding of Pennsylvania, and especially like around Pittsburgh, is a lot of, you know, heavy manufacturing, mm-hmm. you know, steel town, all of that. Right. And so those little towns that boomed during those times, it's a struggle, right?
Right. Yeah, it is. It's sad. You can drive through them and it's just building some of them. But honestly, like I said, we have a really good community here. Again, they've been working on it for long before I arrived.
Sure.
So logging is a big industry here, and mm-hmm. that's still going on. Mm-hmm. So that and manufacturing, we have some big manufacturing plants here.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's still a viable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Viable place. And plus, like I said, we have the forest that people come through from big, you know, from Pittsburgh. Yeah. There's a lot of traffic. So
yeah. Yeah. It's a recreation spot. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, cool. Nice. Yeah. That's so great.
Yeah, it is. It's really a beautiful little town.
You just remind me a lot of, I talked to a woman in Maine. Oh, a couple of years back, and she started sort of like she was heavily involved. I think she started like the Maine Grain Alliance and stuff. And her town did like a bit of an asset survey, right? They said, okay, you know, cause the town was in trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, the community leaders sat down and said, okay, what do we have going for us? What are the assets that we have here? And picked a couple areas and said, let's kind of focus in these industries and stuff. And so she started like a mill and done amazing stuff. Right. But it sounds like you've kind of got the town's thinking that, but you've got thinking that as well in terms of, you know, here's my assets, here's what I've got. What are all the things that I can do? And that's a fun place to be, you know.
Yeah.
You've got the runway to kind of really, really think it through. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for you.
And it's there. I think there's only more, you know what I mean? There's only up, but it's just the wherewithal to stick with it and you know, because even regardless if you're a tiny business or a big business, I've learned little bits, but I've learned that it is all consuming, because when you are the one mm-hmm. that drives it all, like mm-hmm. regardless of, you know, if it's getting people through the door or making sure that the bread comes out and, you know, everything is on one person. It's a lot.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. But it's wonderful. But it's so neat. It's like, I'm amazed that I still smile so big when a loaf comes out and they're beautiful. And it's like, you know, I see it all the time, but.
No, I get you.
It's such a great joy to see a beautiful loaf of bread come out of the oven.
Yeah. And there's just that little millisecond of wonder when it's like the door is closed and it's like, okay, what's going to be in there this time, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It can go the other way too.
We had a
young woman baking with us, and she was so intimidated by the rye bread. She came in one day and finally admitted, she said, I keep having this dream that we open up the oven door to take out the rye and it just all turned to goo. And it just kind of like runs out. It's like, oh no, it's okay. It's okay. Cause I think we were kind of like troubleshooting it. We were, you know, the loaf wasn't where we wanted it to be, but it's like, and it's okay. It's okay. Yeah. You don't want to go that far. Right.
It's like, yeah. Right.
Yeah. Let's think about the exciting times, I guess.
Right. And,
Yeah. So I'm curious, where did the Wild Rose name come from?
Sure. So when I was thinking about a name, I first thought like Wild Flower, F-L-O-U-R. Right. And I really quickly found out that wasn't very original. they were everywhere. And I was like, okay. I had to regroup, but. So Rose kind of came into it just because, so long story short, so I, after high school went to Bible college.
Okay.
And I was just like, you know, thinking one day, like, I'm kind of like, I was not a hippie, but more of a hippie spirit, just like mm-hmm. to go wherever I wanted to. And, like just equating my life to kind of like wildflowers and the seeds just come up wherever they are. And I just had this real strong feeling that was like, no, you're like a rose and you need pruned. Because most people do, you know, like we think we're free and wonderful, but life kind of prunes you quite a bit. So it was a mix of that wildness of the wild yeast and the rose always has to be pruned and
kind of
have to tweak it as it goes. So that's a little backstory. Interesting.
But, oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
Oh, because the so in Canada, the province beside us is Alberta. And even when I lived in Saskatchewan, it was on the other side of us, but it was still in the in the middle. And that's the we call that wild rose country, that or they call themselves that, right?
Because
it's that's their provincial flower, and so that comes up. And then there's also a Canadian flower brand called Five Roses Flower,
like
a wheat flower. Yeah, and so it's sort of like it was funny because when I first you know discovered you read your feed and stuff, and I kind of thought, oh, I wonder if she's in Alberta, you know, really neat.
It's just kind of a play on words, you know, like a true wild rose isn't the same theme as I had from it, but it was
that's
just
okay.
Kind of a,
no, yeah. Yeah, no, that's so neat. Thanks for sharing that. It's neat.
Yeah.
To hear the story,
the meaning behind it.
Something. Yeah. Cause you know, cause it can mean something to you. And something else to your customers too. And that's all fine.
Yeah.
Cause they're just like, yeah, this is this great place I go to.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. And so what's your kind of like summer plans and stuff? You got anything on the go?
I've kind of been like working slowly to just get past the first part of July because we're going on vacation, which I'm thrilled about. So because obviously last year we didn't do anything. And it's been one of those things where I've been like, and again, through COVID, we've been very fortunate. I mean, our small town, for the most part, I stayed open the whole time. No shutdown really. Just very briefly for like a week, but it was one of those things where I was like, oh, I'm fine, this is fine, everyone's fine, and then all of a sudden I was like, I don't think I'm fine.
Yeah,
you know, it would just like hit me like a ton of bricks. And so I've just kind of, we decided we were going to go out of town, so I'm waiting for that, and then hopefully after I get through that vacation and hopefully come back a little more refreshed, we'll start back up and do some Saturday things and just kind of ramp it up. And
yeah, no, hey, I totally get it. Yeah. It's, you know, we live on an island now, and we've had our peaks and valleys with COVID and stuff for sure.
You know,
but honestly, compared to, you know, most parts of Canada and stuff, we've had it pretty mild, you know, and so nothing's been closed totally, you know, restrictions and hours and stuff. And especially the restaurants and bars and stuff have had it really, really tough.
Really, you know, hard.
Because the rules keep changing for them all the time. But you know, I've saying the same story, you know, me personally.
Yeah.
What? I'm fine. I've been doing exactly what I was doing before and, you know, that kind of thing, but it wears you down. You know, and that the good news is I'm on an island, and the bad news is I shouldn't be leaving the island. Right. You know,
right.
And it's like, I'm actually getting my second shot, this afternoon. Then we're planning on going back to Saskatchewan in August. Right.
And
just seeing everybody. Cause it's been like almost a year and a half. Right. It's crazy that, for some family and stuff that, it's just been phone calls for a year and a half.
It's tough.
Yeah. No, good for you.
Thankfully we've all been vaccinated. My husband and myself and my kids are old enough. So they've gotten vaccinated when they lowered that age to 16 or 15.
Yeah.
12. What is, I don't remember, but we got it. So
yeah, we're running a little bit behind, like in Canada, we're a little bit behind you all, sort of catching up. It's like, you know, I think we're probably, you know, 6 weeks behind in terms of like the ages and that kind of things, but
right.
it's, but we the lights at the end of the tunnel, I think, for that, I hope, you know, that by midsummer we'll be okay. But wild times. Well,
it is. It really is.
Yeah. And it sounds like you've got kind of a connection, enough of a connection with your customers that you can let them know and take a break and they can kind of stock up and wait for you to come back and stuff. Eh?
Yeah, exactly. That's what my next post here tomorrow will be, just talking about the fact that I'll be like, next Friday is your last day for a week or two. So you need to get in there and get some bread and throw it in the freezer if you want some, mm-hmm. you know, that's the cool thing about it. It has staying power, right? So
I used to get really precious about it until I realized that everyone that came into the bakery was freezing the bread. But anyways, it was just that's, you know, they only asked two questions. It's like, is how does it freeze and do you have a slicer? That was the only two things they ever asked, right? And so you know, it's like once I got over it.
I know.
Once it leaves my shelves, it's you're on. You know,
do what you want.
I don't want to know. I don't want to. You don't have to tell me.
Yeah, man, a slicer would be wonderful. That's the one thing. Like, people do ask for that, and I'm like, I can cut it if you want me to, but
you know,
and I do sometimes, occasionally. But I always tell them, like, if you're not planning on eating it right now, why don't you just cut it as you go? But
yeah, or at least, you know, cut it in half and freeze half or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like, that was, we finally succumbed after about 2.5 years. And I found one of those Oliver tabletop ones. Like, it just sits on the table and you put a loaf in the bottom and it kind of pushes it up through the top one at a time. Right.
Right.
And it got the job done. And on Saturdays you almost needed to hire somebody to stand there the whole time, but it 6 year old numbers now, but it's like, I don't know. It was under $2,000. It was under $2,000 to get this thing.
Yeah. Right?
So it was like, okay, I'll do that.
It was worth it. Right.
It was worth. Yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, I never liked it even one day, but you know, it was worth it.
But it was worth it. Yeah. That's like a mixer. Like, I was hand mixing everything.
Yeah.
And then when we moved to the new shop, I was like, okay, I'm getting another oven eventually. I'll probably, you know, should maybe think about a mixer. And I had it for a month or two, maybe even longer. And I only used it for pizza dough. I was so scared to change the process. That took a lot to figure that out, mixing in a big mixer compared to hand mixing, but making those little changes.
How are you keeping sort of your knowledge growing and learning as you go? Cause like, you've got repetition.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
How else are you kind of staying informed and stuff?
Tons of like books and online content, and you know, social media is amazing. That's one thing I always kind of internally kind of grapple with, because I make this bread and I have obviously had sourdough bread, but when I try a new thing or I do something, it's completely whatever it is come up with, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like I can compare it to anything. I don't have any local bakeries that do the same thing.
Totally.
I don't have any professional friends who can say, hey, here's what you need to do. You know what I mean? So sometimes I'm like, am I even doing this right? But it works out, and sometimes it doesn't, and you scrap it and you go on to the next thing.
Yeah, but sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, that's
definitely just learning as much as I can. And
that's kind of my next hope of the next time there's a face-to-face baker gathering or something, whether it's the guild or something else.
Yes.
Then I'm going to know we're back, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That was one of my goals for 2020. I actually made I made this big thing about, you know, what I want for 2020 in the bakery.
Yeah.
And one of them was being able to travel to, you know, some event with other bakers and being able, because I have zero of that really.
Yeah.
And then obviously that was all.
Yeah. Here's hoping. Cause it's like, that's the, in my experience, that's the best. That was the nothing moved my knowledge further faster than feeling somebody else's dough in the mixer.
Yes.
It could be whether it's I'm visiting a bakery or going to a guild class or going to Wheatstock or something, right? And you take a class and it's the weirdest thing. And it's like, I remember taking a class from Amy Sherber once at a guild Wheatstock class. That's like Amy's Breads in New York. And she's doing her thing and her process is completely different than my, like, it's kind of the same, but the order's different. And she was at the time, anyways, I put the salt in later kind of person, you know, and I'd been taught you put it in all at once. It's just fine. And you know, that kind of thing. But I'll tell you, you go at the end of the mix there and she's like, okay, you know, everyone give it a pull, see what you got. And it's like, right on. Like that's exactly what I needed. Cause it feels a little different. I've got that picture now. I can go home and try and recreate it. And what am I doing differently? Yeah. Cause whenever I always thought like when I'm doing it my way and I'm doing the reps, but I slowly start deviating. Right. And then you go visit someone else and it helps you. It's like a course correction. And then you kind of, I kind of needed that once a year to go one town over and visit the baker there was a huge thing. So here's hoping. Maybe the next time we meet, it'll be in person at a bread thing. That'd be fun.
That'd be awesome. Absolutely.
Well, thanks so much for doing this.
I appreciate this. And I know that from listening to your other podcasts, it's such a help for someone like me specifically. I mean, I'm sure for everyone, but like if you are out there and kind of you're self-taught and you're doing it on your own and then you hear somebody else who's got a big bakery or a bigger bakery than I do, and they're having some of the same issues. And I'm like, okay,
well,
we've got this, we can work it out.
Yeah. It's funny, but it's like every single person I've talked to, it's like at the end of it, I'm always thinking you're doing great. You're doing great. And so it's like, keep doing what you're doing for sure. And I'm excited. Well, I'm really excited for you because what you're doing is really in the sweet spot for me in terms of, you got a pretty little place. It's right on a main street. You're still doing it your way. Right. And your customers are coming along for the ride, and that's a weird tension or could be too, so good for you. And I'm glad to meet you and I'm feeling your energy. So that's awesome.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. And I am thankful for all the people who come along for the ride.
Yeah. So that was Brooke. A lot of fun. I really, really like her. She's got a lot of energy. Neat idea. Sounds like a really good place that she's got too. The new retail shop that she moved into. It's close to home. She's feeding the people. It's a beautiful thing. So thanks a lot, Brooke, for taking the time to chat. And it was great to get to know you a little bit. I hope you enjoyed the show this week. I enjoyed having the conversation. I really enjoy sharing it with you. And I hope you found it entertaining and maybe even a little helpful. You know, this show is 100% listener supported. That's how I get to do what I do here, is by several people giving small monthly donations to help keep this going, help pay for all of the infrastructure to make a podcast, to make it sound decent, and to put it up on the internet and share with folks. It's not free to pull this together, not even counting the hours it takes to make a show. And I appreciate every single donation that comes in. And every single person that contributes either one time or with a monthly subscription. If you would like to be a show supporter, I'd love it. It would really help. All you have to do is go to riseuppod.com, click on the support the show link, and you can take it from there. It's super easy. And you'll have a very special little place in my heart. Absolutely. Okay. Have a great week. Bake lots this week. Hope you can stay cool. if it's too hot. I know another heat wave is coming across North America here. If you're over in Europe and dealing with all of those floods, I hope you're doing okay. I hope you're not too drastically affected by the rains over there. Maybe we can go back to normal and we can share some of this. We'll send you some heat. You can send us some rain. Until next week, when we have another chat and some more stories, have a great week. Happy baking. Take care. Bye-bye.